This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there. Welcome to episode number 93 of TPF Live. I'm your host, Rob Tiansen, joined alongside with Nathan Solomon, my fellow friend and St. Bonaventure Bonnie Sr. here. So we're back together for another great episode of the World's Fastest Hour Racing Talk. It is indeed, of course, the post-Homestead, pre-Martinsville edition of our show. And unless you're the NASCAR Craftsman Truck Series, who already has your championship four field decided, we've got one more race to worry about in the round of eight, folks, for the NASCAR Xfinity and NASCAR Cup Series. And I'm super excited about that because, well, I get to do all the coverage from home and do all the fun and work from Texas. That means Nathan Solomon's going to be on the road for the penultimate race of the season. Yes, folks, penultimate. That's a big word. We're just trying to teach you some vocabulary here on TPF Live. I'm not asking folks to give a bet as to how many hot dogs Nathan will be eating at Martinsville. He probably will tell me in a little bit, but it's going to be nevertheless a lot of fun because we've got not only Nathan being at the racetrack, but we've got a legendary photographer who's now on our team. And I'm going to be bragging about this really quickly before we bring in Nathan. We've got an illustrious photographer who's been in the world of NASCAR pretty much since I was a little kid back in the early 90s. And that gentleman would be Phil Cavalli, who, if that name sounds familiar, it better, folks, because he was a photographer for NASCAR Illustrated, as well as other media outlets in the world of racing. It is so super cool to have somebody like him on our team. And that tells you, folks, that we take this stuff very seriously. So seriously that I almost said a swear word and I didn't. But anyways, before I cuss and get an FCC fine, let's go bring in Nathan, because I'm sure he's giving me that look like, don't swear, Rob, don't swear. So Nathan, welcome back. Happy to have you back on board after a couple of weeks. I'm sure you're excited for Martinsville.
Yeah, it's good to be back. I've not been able to do this podcast as much as I would have liked to lately, just because for whatever reason, my Wednesday nights have been populated with other broadcast responsibilities. We're just wrapping up the ESPN soccer side of things out here at St. Bonaventure. I know I had something going on last Wednesday as to why I could not record, but I don't remember exactly what that was. But yeah, hopefully this will now begin a string of weeks where I will be here. Probably not next week. We'll see. But Wednesdays are very busy for me, so, though it's very good to be here. Like you mentioned, the hot dogs, that's a great question. I love hot dogs. I'm going to say at least over four, because if I remember correctly from seeing like posts before, they're only like a couple dollars. So I think that really fits well within my budget for this weekend. So I'm going to guess at least over four hot dogs. But other than that, I'm looking forward to get down to Martinsville. I've never been down there before. The second to last race of the year, certainly the biggest race I've covered, or I will be covering. I'm pumped. I'm ready to hit the road tomorrow.
It sounds like it. You sound like you're ready to do over 500 laps of racing, because you will be covering more than 500 laps of racing. So all the hot dogs you can get from the hot dog stand is going to be really important. That means people like me who like chicken tenders may be a little adverse about Martinsville's limited selections, but that's okay. It is a different kind of weekend, and it's the second to last race weekend of the season. So looking forward to what you'll do and not just eat at the racetrack. And if that isn't enough for you folks to hear us talk about the action in the world of NASCAR at the paperclip, well, let me tell you folks, you've tuned into the right show in terms of our hot seat segment, because it's really live this time. It's going to be super exciting. We have a championship winning driver who will be in the hot seat with me and Nathan, and he hails from California. And he made his first start in the world of Trans Am, specifically first ever start in TA2 in the West Coast Series. He's come back after 4 years and he's ready. He's better than ever. That gentleman who's going to be in the hot seat a little bit later on is Roger Eagleton. And it's going to be such a pleasure to have him around to hear his perspectives on the world of Trans Am, you know, how his career has been, what he does, and how he's been able to wear different hats to try to achieve his dreams in the world of motorsports. So I'm super excited about that and can't wait to go and have you folks get to hear more from Roger Eagleton. But with that, before we get started with Podium Perspectives and all the nitty gritty that you usually hear us talk about on our podcast, why don't we take a moment to hear from our sponsor, SpoilerDieCast.com.
Hey, racing fans. Are you in the hunt for the latest diecast cars from Lionel Racing or F1 or IndyCar diecasts? Well, look no further. If you head to SpoilerDieCast.com, you'll find all of the latest and greatest diecast cars and get free shipping and 5% off of your orders if you use promo code TPF by spending $20 or more on your items. Head over to SpoilerDieCast.com and let Evan and his team know that you want the best diecast cards around. And if you use promo code TPF, you'll be in the winner's circle. It doesn't get better than that. So just head on over to SpoilerDieCast.com and make your latest purchases today.
And as the season winds down, folks, go ahead and do some shopping. Treat yourself. Go to SpoilerDieCast.com. Use that promo code of TPF. You'll save yourself 5% off and get free shipping for any orders of $20 or more. I'm telling you, folks, you'll be so happy because Evan and his team will get those cars delivered to you super, super fast. I would say almost as fast as Kyle Larson's pit crew or as fast as Xfinity 10G. No, we're not sponsored by Xfinity, unfortunately. But anyways, you get the idea. But right now, why don't we get ready for Podium Perspectives powered by SpoilerDieCast.com. Homestead was a crazy, crazy race in terms of the Cup Series. In fact, the Xfinity Series and Truck Series races were entirely exciting. It got me tongue twisted right there, folks. But we'll just talk about the Cup Series just because that was the one that was most captivating, at least to me, because when it came to who won the race, Mr. October came through yet again. I'm talking about Christopher Bell, folks, because last year he was up against the wall about his chances to get into the round of eight last year to the Charlotte Roval. What did he do? He won. And in fact, going into this race weekend at Martinsville last year, what was his situation? Oh, he needed to win the race to get into the championship for Phoenix. What did he do? He won. I know he didn't do a cool Hail Melon move or anything like that, but he got a clutch victory and he had a chance to go and win his first championship. Now, of course, he didn't, but I would say Christopher Bell just has a penchant to get things done when crunch time is here because, ladies and gentlemen, he did the same exact thing again this past Sunday at Homestead. Now, look for a while that Kyle Larson and Ryan Blaney were going to be the prime contenders. You know the story, of course. Lap 214. Both drivers were going down pit road. Blaney was going a little bit conservative. Larson was a little too aggressive. And in his efforts to try to avoid Blaney's car, he still hit his right rear and he smashed into the stand barrier, which effectively ended his day. Ryan Blaney was able to carry on and, in fact, almost won the race. Although, as Jasmine Sharp would like to say, there's some beef going on with him and Hamlin. But in the end, Christopher Bell emerged victorious. Joe Gibbs Racing has at least one chance to go and win the championship for this coming November. So Nathan, what do you think of this whole situation for Mr. Bell? I mean, he had a close call at Las Vegas. You know, how big was this victory for him, and who do you think is going to join him at Phoenix?
Yeah, I mean, Christopher Bell certainly has a knack now for getting things done in crunch time. I mean, his third clutch victory now in the playoffs in the last 2 years, you know, Christopher Bell really has flown under the radar this season. I mean, this is only his second win of the year. His only other win came at Bristol Dirt all the way back at Easter, and he had some struggles over the summer. I mean, from, you know, July and August, that 20 team really struggled to put races together and kind of fell off a little bit. I mean, at the round, you know, Atlanta, New Hampshire, middle of the summer, we were kind of talking about him as one of the guys that could potentially sneak away and have a chance to win the regular season championship. That obviously did not happen, and I think he got forgotten about. And then after kind of, you know, through consistency the first couple rounds, he finally put it all together these last 2 weeks, almost won Las Vegas, and now did win Homestead after being way off with like 100 laps to go in the race. I mean, him and Adam Stevens were really kind of going back and forth with each other. Christopher Bell was not happy. They ended up going the wrong way on some adjustments, but they got it back. They got track position, which definitely helped with that caution from Kyle Larson. And I mean, that's obviously an unfortunate mistake that Larson made. In my opinion, you can't really put it on Blaney. I know Blaney had trouble trouble making pit road on Saturday in practice. You know, this was a clutch pit stop. He wanted to make sure he took it a little bit easier on pit road and did. Larson just didn't stop and obviously, I guess in a sense, made the smart decision and sent it into the tire barriers versus taking on another playoff contender. And I heard him basically say that in one of his interviews that I'm not going to go take out, you know, Blaney while I'm in, and he's not. So a mistake by him. Obviously, Larson is lucky to be in. You know, if he was not, if let's say Bell won at, Las Vegas too, then Larson would probably be looking at a must-win situation right now. Obviously, that's not the case, but Homestead delivered again. I mean, every time we go to Homestead, it puts on a great show. It doesn't seem to matter what type of car is there, whether it's the Cup car, the Xfinity car, the truck, the next-gen car, the Gen 6 car. They all put on a great show at Homestead. They're ripping the fence. It was really fun. That Blaney-Bell battle there, the closing laps, was great. Homestead's always one of my favorite races of the year, and I still think it should be the championship race, but I'm not going to open the scheduling aspect of this version of this can of worms when it comes to scheduling. How about that?
You read my mind because I was just about to ask you about that, so you definitely agreed with me on that. Yes, I'm not going to go too far, but amen to that. Homestead should be the finale. Enough said. But yes, Mr. Bell certainly proved his point to being a clutch race car driver. And a lot of folks may have counted him out, but no pun intended, of course, but he certainly knows how to respond to the bell. I mean, he was just within a whisker of winning at Las Vegas. And that's a good point that Nathan brought up, that if Bell had won at Las Vegas and he won at Homestead like he did on Sunday, then Kyle Larson would be in a lot of trouble right now, because that same aggression that we saw that got him the victory at Las Vegas, I feel like it cost him at Homestead. So in a way, Martinsville is a very important race for the number five team to prove that, yes, they can have a mistake-free race, or at least a race where they don't have a lot of unforced errors, especially with the driver. So Martinsville is going to be an important race, and we'll see what happens. Fortunately, they're in. But man, if they hadn't won at Las Vegas, that made Homestead seem a lot more delicate than it had to be for the number five team. One thing we know is not very delicate right now is what's going on with Chandler Smith in terms of his plans for next season, because it was announced earlier this week that he will be departing Colic Racing after this season. The graphic from Colic Racing was a little bit like his final last race ever, which I was like, ooh, Taylor Swift kind of stuff going on right now. So we don't know exactly where he's going to go, but if social media has been correct as of late, all signs seem to be pointing to him going to JGR, Jacobs Racing. So is Chandler having some bad blood right now, Nathan? What do you think?
Yeah, I'd imagine so. I mean, obviously, we don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but I believe they had signed a 3-year deal before this season, him and Colic Racing. Obviously, this buyout happens basically after year one. So there's certainly some sort of discontent, I'd imagine, between Smith and the Colic Racing group. And I mean, again, we don't know this for certain, but as of right now, it looks like all signs are leading towards a return to Toyota Racing Development and then over to JGR on the Xfinity side. You know, obviously, every seat is open right now in that JGR Xfinity camp. Now that you got John Hunter Nemechek going up to Cup, you've got Sammy Smith going over to JRM, everything's wide open. So that's kind of what it's looking like, and I know he's not the only current full-time Xfinity Series driver that's also rumored to be going over there. But I know that JGR stable will likely be looking a lot different here in 2024. And I think on that note, you know, kind of talking about some of the silly season stuff, we also did get some big silly season news today on the Xfinity side that Jesse Love is making a huge jump going from ARCA with Venturini to RCR on the Xfinity side of things. So that kind of fits into that Xfinity Series silly season picture. I didn't really expect Jesse Love to be leaving TRD either. So there's definitely some mixing and matching and some swapping going around right now between Chevrolet and Toyota. So we'll see who else might end up on the Toyota end of all this mixing and matching.
Yeah, because it seems like the Chevrolet and Toyota camps are just happily saying, hey, I'll give you this piece for this piece. It's almost like playing Monopoly with your family or friends when it comes to those two OEMs. And that's a big move, like you mentioned, about Jesse Love, because not only is it going to be with RCR, it's fully funded. He's got a full sponsorship in Wayland. So All he's got to do is just hold his end of the bargain. And if he can get some wins, some top fives, some top tens, this young driver is going to have quite the season. And as far as Chandler Smith is concerned, once they announced that his plans to go to JGR, it will probably happen. It's going to be interesting to see what happens afterwards with Colic Racing, because as RCR and JGR are starting to climb up the hill a bit in Xfinity, we're starting to see some issues crop up with Colic Racing. So stay tuned for our thoughts about this. And of course, articles from Nathan, me, and the rest of our team when more silly season moves are announced. And who knows? It could happen when Nathan's at Martinsville, which I'm sure he'd love to be a part of in hearing this weekend. Now, another thing we're going to talk about this weekend is, of course, the Cup Series race. We're not towards winning time, folks, but the thing we have to talk about, of course, is the Gen 7 car, the next-gen car, its ability to be a competitive car at a short track like Martinsville. Now, Nathan and I have been beating all you to death in the head, if you will, about how the short tracks have not been the greatest for NASCAR's Cup Series action. But there is some promising developments about this Sunday's race at Martinsville and this weekend in general, because I saw on Bob Pockers' X account on Wednesday morning that the tires for Martinsville are going to be new. They have a thicker tread than what was used in April. This was tested in July at Richmond. Of course, that big test that was supposed to happen at New Hampshire that we didn't get to have happen because of Mother Nature being a jerk. So Goodyear is saying that it's going to be a bit more forgiving and seems to open the tuning window for the teams. I am no mechanic, but if I had to read between the lines, sounds like we've got some variability, which might actually create some racing opportunities. But Nathan, you know, you have seen some of the short track racing this year. Is the tire going to make much of a difference here, or are we just kind of grasping at straws and hoping for something to happen at this point?
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's a lot of unknowns here, but I think it's definitely worth a shot. And like you said, this tire was tested at Richmond at the end of July, was supposed to be tested at New Hampshire, and I think everybody was kind of hoping that New Hampshire would give a better reading on how these tires would feel, because Loudon is a lot more like, has more characteristics to some of these other short tracks compared to Richmond, which is just across the board not had great racing the last several years, when we know Martinsville certainly has the potential to have some great racing. So we don't really know. I mean, the most they tested it was in a pack of six cars, so that's also not laying as much rubber down. You're not racing as much either. I think it could work. It's tough either way, because remember, these tires are 18-inch tires compared to 15, so it's automatically laying more rubber down just because, well, they're bigger, so they're taking up much space. But I think it could help if it's a little bit more forgiving and you can kind of tune in a little bit more like Goodyear is hoping for, then that could definitely allow for potentially some tire fall off, and that's what we're looking for, right? If there is tire fall off, we imagine that there will be some pretty good racing, because when there's obviously guys on different tire strategies, different types of tires, different tire wears, then that's how you get passing. So we'll see. I mean, Martinsville's a one groove racetrack that definitely makes it difficult. I think a factor that will be a positive is the weather. It's going to be warm. It's going to be sunny. We're talking low 80s for this weekend. So I think that should certainly help, because I've noticed in particular that when these short track races are in cooler weather, they're really, really bad. There seems to be a little bit more variability in movement when it's in some warmer weather. So we'll be blessed by great weather this weekend. Hopefully that and the new tire will put on a combination for a good race. You know, I'm sure this race will certainly be better than the fall or than the spring. There's going to be that playoff urgency. So I think we see a pretty solid race. I think the tire is more of just a temporary fix to the deeper issues with this car, because when you're shifting at Martinsville, I think that's still an issue. So we'll see. I think it could help, but we won't really know until Saturday. I'm curious just to watch what those lap times are in practice and qualifying. That might give us a real good indication in terms of fall off of what we might get come to the race on Sunday.
Agreed. I think that's going to be a really good thing to watch on Saturday afternoon when they get to go out there and practice, not just to only get some hot laps for qualifying, but of course to go and get a feel of the race, because even though it's a limited practice session, folks, laps can go by pretty quickly. So you can get a pretty decent run in and certainly get a feel for, hey, is my car going to be good as the tires get worn out? Or do I have a car that's got short run speed? What do I have that I can help out with my crew chief and my team to get this car prepared, given how limited we are on the variability factors. So it should be interesting. I certainly hope we see some bumping and banging at Martinsville. And I think that's what a lot of folks want to see at home as well, is the ability for somebody, if they have a problem on pit road or they get spun out on the racetrack, hey, they can come from like 27th place and march up to the top 10 about, you know, say 70 to 100 laps later. That's the kind of stuff you want to see at the paperclip track. So we'll find out as this weekend goes on at the 0.526 mile racetrack in Ridgeway, Virginia. And speaking of, I think it is time for a little bit of winning time here on TPF Live's Podium Perspectives. So of course, this segment, I always defer to Nathan first. And hey, last time, folks, this guy was two for two in terms of his race picks. So maybe don't listen to me in terms of my picks. Listen to Nathan. And to me, I'm just kind of the person you tune out afterwards. But we'll start off, of course, with the NASCAR Xfinity Series Dead On Tools 250, won by Ty Gibbs last year. Of course, he's not entered in because he's a Cup driver now. And then on Sunday, we've got the NASCAR Cup Series Xfinity 500, won by Christopher Bell. And I'm sure he would love to go and duplicate that victory this year. So, Nathan, who are your picks for this weekend?
I know, I've been really hot lately on this podcast because I got both picks right at Talladega. I got the Sam Mayer pick right at the Roval, so I was at that point riding three in a row. We'll see if I can carry this momentum into this weekend. Xfinity Series, I'm going John Hunter Nemechek. He's not locked in yet officially, I don't think, in terms of the Xfinity Final Four, but he's pretty close on points. It would take a really bad day and help, basically, for him to not get in. But I think he'll go out and win anyway. He's really good at Martinsville. He won the spring race, has won a lot of races this year at a bunch of different types of racetracks. I still think he's the title favorite, so I'll go with Nemechek. And then Cup side, we'll go Ryan Blaney. He has not won yet at Martinsville, though he has some very good finishes on the NASCAR Cup side. I think he's about 10 points to the good right now. He's got a little bit of a cushion. I think that he'll finally win, though, to solidify his first trip to the Championship Four. And really, I don't know what they found, because Team Penske has really struggled across the board, and Ford has struggled across the board this year outside of like RFK, but they have been really strong in the playoffs, especially these last couple weeks. I mean, I did not see them being as quick as they were at Homestead on Sunday. Typically, that's the mile and a half have been where that team has been lacking. So I'll go with Blaney, though, on the short track.
I like those picks. So you're going with Nemechek and Ryan Blaney. I almost want to go the same lines, but hey, I'm going to be the contrarian here and try to do something different. So as far as the Xfinity race is concerned, I think Josh Berry does get that last victory for JRM. Hey, I know Dale Jr. wants to make it up for him after he kind of wrecked him out inside the last 20 laps, and that had to make him feel pretty crappy. So I'm sure they're going to give him a good car and set him up so that Josh can get himself one more grandfather clock before he graduates to the Cup Series after the season. So I'll go with him. And as far as the Cup Series race is concerned, man, this can go any way right now, because in the spring race, even though Kyle Larson won, he wasn't exactly the best car during that race. You know, I would argue that, yeah, Ryan Blaney was really good in that one. You know, a lot of other Martin Truex Jr. was looking good too. This one's kind of a tough one for me, folks. I mean, it was easy for me to make those picks last couple of weeks, but if I have to be pretty unbiased, give you a really solid pick right now, I'm going to say I'll go with Martin Truex Jr. to get the victory on Sunday. I know he doesn't really love that racetrack. I know a lot of folks right now are thinking that him and James Small, they just hate each other to death. But remember, folks, Christopher Bell got pretty snippy with Adam Stevens on the radio on stage two at Homestead. So it's heat of the moment stuff. Happens to brothers, you know? So I think Martin Truex Jr. gets it done. So that way here, he makes it a twofer for the JGR team and the Championship Four. And who knows, maybe Mr. William Byron will try to knock his way to the front, but it's anyone's guess. That's why we make predictions, right? So what do you think, folks? Why don't you get with us on social media, whether it's X, Threads, if anyone even uses Threads at this point, Instagram or Facebook. Nathan's handles, of course, and Sully02. Mine is at Rob Tiongson, and you can get to both of us at the Podium Finish. And again, folks, if you happen to get the race-winning picks for both events, we will personally purchase you a 2023 in-stock 164 diecast car, courtesy of SpoilerDiecast.com. We want to see a winner. We haven't had one yet. So make your picks, get with us, and please, folks, win the prize. It would be awesome. Now with that, I think it's time to go into the hot seat with Roger Eagleton right now. Well, welcome back to another edition of In the Hot Seat here on TPF Live. And it's a really great one because we're bringing the word live for once instead of a recording for the segment. And in this case, we are so pleased to have a championship driver on this segment. This man knows how to win races. He knows how to contend. He is a proven commodity in the world of Trans Am and TA2. And that gentleman, of course, is Roger Eagleton. And I'm so excited to have him here. And Roger, how are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. A really great intro. It's really nice to be here with both of you. So I'm looking forward to this interview and see what we can do to bring some cool content to your followers.
Oh, absolutely. It's such a thrill because, you know, you're such a great story and somebody that I think a lot of folks here can understand and appreciate just because, like Nathan and me and a lot of folks who cover racing or follow racing, you're not just a racing car driver and have that FIA bronze license. You also do other things on the side in the real estate property management side. So I see that you have your sponsor, of course, on your polo. So I'd be remiss because you're a race car driver. Tell us about your company.
Yeah, so we're based in the Bay Area, California. So we do property management, kind of focused on single family homes. Pretty high end is what we're after. We've been doing this for over 10 years. I started the business really because I wanted a way to get into racing, and kind of the two passions went together. I mean, you have to execute, you have to have a plan, and you really have to have a solid team together to make things work on both sides, both on the real estate side and the racing side. So it really is kind of a good fit. And not only that, we've got a lot of partners that we've worked with through the business that we've kind of brought over to the racing side. And everybody has a lot of fun. You know, and again, at the end of the day, we're just still learning how to continually get better. And I think that feeds into what we do with racing, which is lap after lap. I think some people could say, doesn't that get boring? You're just going around the same track and you're like, well, you are, but it's never the same lap. You know, there's always something different that's going on. The car's changing, the tire's changing, the conditions are changing. And I think it's the same approach in business. I mean, we may manage, you know, 200 properties, but they're not the same. There's always different issues that pop up. So it's cool. It's just, we're always engaged fully with what we're doing. And it's a fun task to have those kind of outlets in your life. Cause otherwise I think it would get kind of boring.
You've got to be multifaceted, and I can certainly appreciate where you're coming from, Roger, just because if you're so one-dimensional, like tunnel visioned in life, it gets episodic. So it sounds like to me, you have quite the extraordinary life, and I love your social media profile. You're like, I'm a professional race car driver, I've got real estate property management, and I'm a hand model as well. So I thought that was really, it shows your personality. So I think that was cool. And one thing that's so cool about you is not only the fact that you returned from racing, you are a champion. Like I said in the beginning, you won the 2019 Trans Am West Coast Championship in the GT class. I mean, before we talk about the present, how special was that season for you to go accomplish such a pinnacle in your career?
It was really cool. I mean, it was kind of like a lot of things with racing, it was kind of a last minute deal that we didn't even really have on our radar. We were running our spec Mustangs, which are the 2005 through 2009 S197 chassis with a 4.6 liter Ford motor. You know, not the most powerful cars. They put out about 315 horsepower to the rear wheels, but they're really dynamic cars, fun cars to drive. And we found out that we could enter them into the GT class with Trans Am on the West Coast. And we're like, well, you know, we were just doing club racing at the time. We're like, well, why don't we just give it a shot and see what happens? What you end up doing is you end up putting on a really sticky set of Pirelli racing slicks. And that really kind of changes the whole dynamic of what the vehicle will do. My teammate, Bo Borders, joined with me. And then we had a couple other guys from the West Coast that jumped into the GT class as well. And we ended up running almost every race out of the calendar. And we had just enough points at the end to secure the championship, but it was a lot. It was a big jump from doing the club level stuff, but it was a really good experience overall. We were really happy with everybody in Trans Am. I think it got our team, which is Dig Motorsports, I think it got them really excited and interested in pursuing Trans Am at the next level, which obviously is TA2. It just took a few years because obviously we had, you know, a pandemic to contend with in there. So after that hiatus due to that, they were able to pick up a TA2 car, a couple different chassis, and kind of jump in here towards the end of the season, obviously, but it's a good opportunity to just kind of learn how the car works and how the series works at this level. But yeah, 2019 was super cool. Great experience. And hopefully we can replicate that championship at the TA2 level, you know, 2024.
I would love to see that just because it's such a great story about how you came back. You mentioned, of course, the pandemic certainly changing everyone's lives, turning it upside down. But you kept your head up. You kept yourself relevant, your name out there. And I know before you got to Spring Mountain, you even did a couple of laps, about 11 laps, I believe, at Thunderhill Raceway in Willis, California. Let me ask you this. I know you've been keeping sharp, doing some racing or some driving, of course, but when you got to clamber in that car for the first time, was that like a hair-raising moment for you, realizing, man, I'm going to end this drought. I'm actually coming back?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I mean, the TA2 car is such a different beast than what I've driven in the past. I mean, it's a two-frame chassis, 500 horsepower to the wheels. I mean, it splits, you know, it spits flames out the exhaust when you're driving it. I think it actually scared me the first time I heard the backfire from inside the car, because I was like, oh my God, what was that? Like, it's like, are the wheels falling off? And I was like, oh, it's the backfire. So yeah, it's a whole different thing. I mean, it really is... I think it's what a race car should be, which is like raw and real visceral. And like, it, you notice it, like there's no way you don't notice it. And I think that's one of the big things about the Trans Am series in general is these cars, they're kind of throwbacks, but I think they're what racing is, what we thought of when we were little kids, which is like loud, obnoxious cars. You know, these are not like the most technologically advanced cars, but that's okay. I don't think that's what these are supposed to be. These are supposed to be raw V8 powered cars that make a lot of noise. They go really fast. They smell like real race cars. And that's what we want to see. Because when we were playing with Hot Wheels, when we were little kids, we weren't thinking about like DRS and KERS and all this other stuff. Like, you know, it just wasn't on our radar. And that stuff is super cool. I'm not knocking it. But I think, you know, when it comes down to what racing is, it's like, who can go faster, given this very basic machinery that levels the playing field? And that's what these TA2 cars and the TA cars too really do, is like, they're very basic, fast, high performance machines, and they don't leave a lot of room for driver error. And at the end of the day, if somebody goes faster, you can't say it was the car, it was the driver. So it really sets the bar high when you see these guys that are flying out there. You're like, well, if they can do it, I got to figure out how to do it as well, because it's not like they're doing anything super, super trick. It's just they're better drivers. So it really is motivating, but still exciting just to be inside the car and hear it from obviously outside and watch it.
It sounds really fascinating to know. It's a little bit of a throwback series, despite how modern these cars look, because when I look at them from the outside, they kind of remind me of the current next-gen cars and the Cup Series of NASCAR. But the way you described it, it kind of reminds me of the good old days of NASCAR, where, you know, it's carburetor-based, it's 700 horsepower, and it's the thrill to hear, you know, just how real these cars are compared to how engineered F1 can be, IndyCar, NASCAR, and all those other series in between, Roger. So that's so cool. And I do want to talk about your race weekend at Spring Mountain, because I know that was a big deal for you, I'm sure. I mean, you had to do those test sessions, the practice sessions, qualifying. I mean, when you were shaking down that car and getting into that number 33 Ford Mustang for DIG Motorsports and five-star property management, you know, were you thinking, you know, I might actually have a chance to get myself a top five finish if I can do this?
Yeah, I think, I mean, everything was new to us. I mean, again, we did 11 laps prior to this event, which in retrospect, probably we should have done more, because again, it's a whole new platform, a whole new dynamic of driving, but we're very ambitious. So we just hit it. We went to Spring Mountain, a beautiful facility out in Pahrump, Nevada, and a very interesting track, because it doesn't look super technical, but it actually is pretty technical once your boots on the ground there dealing with it. So we definitely had a steep learning curve, not only with the track, but again, just with the car and even the basics of getting seated properly in the car, because it's such a big deal with these cars. You have to feel the cars, you have to be comfortable with them. And again, it's just a different platform than what I was personally used to. So we had our very steep learning curve. And I mean, there were moments when I was like, man, I don't know, maybe this was like a little bit too ambitious, but the closer we got towards like the race pace and then closer to just to race day, and once we got into the thick of it, you know, we were fine. We were dicing it up. Unfortunately, we had mechanicals we were battling, you know, for fifth, and that took us out. But otherwise, I feel like we're there. You know, it was a good way to kind of shake the cobwebs off and realize that the team has got what it takes. We just basically need to tighten up a few little things here, and I think we're going to be ready for 2024. But Yeah, it was definitely an ambitious undertaking is what I will say. And there were moments when I was like, man, I might have bitten off more than what I could chew. But, you know, once the visor's down, the green flag drops and you're out there racing wheel to wheel, you forget about all that and you just focus on the task at hand. And once we were doing that, it was fine. It was totally like a, you know, Sunday afternoon drive.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and I looked at the picture that we have of you from Spring Mountain that Seth Dedo's got of you. And I was like, I could see the smile behind your baklava. Like, you are so happy. And, you know, I know you didn't get the finish you were looking for, but you proved to me and a lot of folks that, hey, Roger Eagleton is still here to stay. And I know you talked about it before we started recording that, you know, things may not happen for COTA, but, you know, for these TA2 and TA teams that are getting ready for the COTA finale, next weekend, what can you tell us about racing at this prestigious track that's not that far from Austin?
Yeah, it's another beautiful facility. I mean, it obviously F1 is there, NASCAR is there. It's a beautiful facility. I encourage everybody that has the opportunity to go check it out in person. Just because, you know, obviously watching racing on TV and online, I mean, it's good. I'm glad people are doing it, but there's nothing that's going to beat the in-person experience. And I feel like watching it at COTA is going to allow you to get up close and personal, both with the drivers and with the teams, and really just see what these cars do around this really technical circuit. I mean, you have very high speed, long straights, you have super technical S's, heavy, heavy braking zones, super tight corners as well. So, I mean, COTA is a challenge no matter what car you're in, but in these TA2 cars, I mean, it's going to really show you who has got their setup dialed in and who has got their driving dialed in as well. And I think it's going to be an exciting race because you've got guys out there that are super hungry that want to show both themselves and then teams for next year what they can do. And you've got the national guys and the West Coast guys running together. So you're going to have a really, really big field. And of course, the West Coast guys, you know, we're out here all on our own and sometimes we feel a bit neglected. So they're going to want to really show the East Coast guys like, hey, we're here, we're serious. So there's going to be some inter-series rivalry, I think. So it's going to be a super exciting event. I mean, the fireworks are definitely going to fly and, you know, just hope everybody keeps it nice and clean and all the cars finish at the end. But it's going to be like a serious, serious, intense race. So I would do anything I can to make sure that we get there. And even if we don't get there to race, just to get there to watch firsthand and see what happens.
That would be fun. And I personally can't wait to go and see all the action next weekend. And if you're there, I look forward to meeting you too, just because I can't wait to learn more about your perspective about TA2 racing and just racing at COTA in general, because I know you've been there in the past. And I think Nathan has a question for you for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, Roger, you talked about kind of shaking off some of those cobwebs and just kind of getting back into things. And you talked about 2024. So I got to ask, what is next for you and what does 2024 look like for you right now?
2024, I mean, well, I guess first the cobwebs, you know, during kind of my time off, I'd been living between Hawaii and California. Hawaii is great. It's a beautiful place to visit. I definitely encourage everybody to do that. The thing they don't have is racing and there's no racetracks. So it was kind of hard to get any practice in. I spent a lot of time on the simulator though. I had a pretty good simulator setup that kind of kept me fresh. And occasionally I jump into a club race here or there, but I mean, really at the end of the day, the only thing you can do to stay fresh is just get into the race car that you're going to race and practice in it. And I think that's what we're going to focus on doing for the rest of this year up to 2024. For 2024, we would love to run the full West Coast series. We're looking to add one more title sponsor to our package. And I think that would complete the deal. We've got a pretty good program put together already, but we really need one more title sponsor to join with us to round out the program. I think we're going to go for a two-car team as well. So not only would it be myself and the number 33 Dig Motorsports Ford Mustang, but we have another chassis. It would actually be it's a Howe chassis, but it's going to be a Camaro bodied car. So perfect for somebody that's a GM lover to jump in a Camaro and see how well they do out here on the West Coast. And I think there's quite a bit of demand. If you kind of ask around the paddock, there's a shortage of available spaces and available rides. So, you know, I think we can put it together. And I think Digg Motorsports is super excited about making that happen. They're still a relatively new team, but obviously they're very experienced when they put their mind to it. You know, we picked up the 2019 championship with it. At the club level, they've won everything around, including the 25 hours of Thunderhill, which is no, you know, small accomplishment on the endurance racing side. So really, I think their goal is to get out there and put their stamp of authority on the TA2 West Coast Championship and win a championship it for at least 2024, if not going forward for a couple of years. So that's our goal with this going forward.
And Trans Am Racing, to me, it's just so unique, right? It almost feels like it's some sort of gap between like NASCAR and IMSA racing. So why do you think fans should watch Trans Am Racing and get into it? Because I feel like this is kind of one of the more underrated forms of racing, in, at least on the American side of things.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Trans Am is kind of going through a renaissance period right now. I think that the series and the series owners have done a really good job of getting the ball rolling again with what they have. Obviously, on the national level, it has really, really blown up. The West Coast is really starting to kind of gain its stride as well, and you've got big fields. And the reason I like it is, you know, it's still expensive, just like any form of motorsports, but it is more approachable than jumping into an IMSA series or maybe jumping into NASCAR, because it's just a whole different animal. So you can still do it if you're, let's say, at the club level and you've done really, really well at the club level, but you don't know what the next step is. Trans Am is definitely a viable option for you to get out there and try it. And again, a lot of the guys and gals that are racing have this background where they really love NASCAR. You know, maybe they have missed the opportunity to jump into NASCAR, but the next best thing for them is to jump into a Trans Am car and really see how they do in it. Because it is, again, a very similar platform to what the NASCAR, you know, used to be. And I just think, again, it's a great series. It's very approachable. You can literally walk up to the teams in the paddock. There's no, you know, $50,000 passes that you need to get like F1. This is, you walk up and, hey, we might put you to work too. Like, hey, grab a rag and help us clean up the car. So it's a very approachable series, and it's still, at the end of the day, very, very tight racing. And the officials do a good job with keeping the series very fair and clean. And I just think they've got all the right things in place to make the series continue to grow in 2024 and beyond. And that's why we're excited to be part of it. And I'm happy with what we've done in the past with them, and I'm super excited about what we're going to do with them going forward.
And you said you're maybe looking to bring in another partner for the 2024 season. So how can people and companies reach out to you?
Yeah, definitely reach out. My website, RogerEagletonRacing.com. I think you guys will probably have a link up to it, or just reach out to me on social media. We have space for one more title sponsor. We've got a package pretty much put together with everybody else. But if you have, I'd say, a company that's focused maybe on the West Coast, maybe a medium to large type of company with multiple locations, you want to get some brand exposure out there and you have a background or an interest in racing, this is a great place to put your brand and show people what your company is all about. The demographic that follows Trans Am is just like the demographic that follows IMSA or these other series. I mean, it tends to be a little bit of an older crowd. They have money, they have real estate, they have assets that they want to invest in. So it's a crowd that most advertisers would kill to get in front of. And we have their attention because, again, most people are not catering to them when it comes to this kind of interest. And so really, I think it's an untapped market. And every time we go someplace, I mean, people are so interested in the brands that we represent because it is directly relevant to what they are in need of in their life. So yeah, if you have an interest or you have a company or a partnership you might want to propose, reach out to us and we'd be happy to see what we can do together.
Yeah, sounds great, Roger. And we'll definitely make sure we put a link in our podcast description and our tweets and everything so that people can reach out to you. And we'd love to help you out so that you can make that title sponsorship possible. And hopefully this is not the first time that you'll, and only time you'll be on TPF's hot seat segment, because we definitely need to get more sports car presence. And you're certainly someone we'd love to have your perspectives on, and not just about racing, but your perspectives racing in the car. So we're just so happy that you got to stop by. Is there anything else you want to say to the fans, your folks, or anybody out there before we wrap up the segment?
No, I mean, it's just great to be on here. I'm happy to see that the interest for racing is still out there and it's alive. I think, you know, one of the fears that you have as you get older and you are still racing is that, like, is this sport still relevant? Is it going to be relevant? Because I feel like a lot of younger people are not tuned into it. But then, you know, you come on a show like this and you read and you see what you guys are producing, you realize there is a market for it. And I think, you know, we're going to experience a period in society where people come back to this stuff, because again, it's accessible, it's fun, it's exciting. And it's not, you know, you can add in some of the tech stuff, but you don't necessarily need it to have a super, super cool experience. I mean, really, sometimes it just comes down to being able to contact and meet in person with these drivers and these teams and the races themselves to just share a common experience with everybody. And it's fun. I mean, you know, you set aside all your political differences, any other personal beliefs, just focus on the cars, focus on the racing. That's all that matters at the end of the day. Have fun, bring your friends, bring your family. Trans Am is a great package. And I think that, again, going forward, we're going to do some really great things together. And I would love to do this again with you guys and have you out to one of the races and see what it's like to spend a weekend with us. But I mean, again, I'm warning you, we may put you to work. So, you know, don't wear super nice clothes because you're probably going to get dirty.
Oh, don't worry about it. Nathan and I love racing entirely. So we do anything to be in the paddock, well, as you say.
Just remember that if you're crawling underneath the car and you're back at like 2 a.m. in the morning, you've got oil dripping all over you. Just remember what you just said.
I will. And not to sound chauvinistic, but you girls would like me when I look like that. So I'm just saying, chicks dig the hard work, right?
Heck yeah. Yep. There you go.
I'm just saying, I don't know. I'm older, Roger. I like to goof around like that, but good to have you on, my friend. I'm so happy we got to tell your story and we'll tell more of it in the future. So just drop a line to us and stop by anytime you want.
Okay. Awesome. Really nice to chat with you guys. And again, look forward to doing this again and hopefully meeting in person at one of the races that are coming up.
Absolutely. And you folks from the West Coast, Northern California, if you're looking for good properties to go and rent out or work out with, talk to Roger. His company knows what they're doing with 5-star property management. So just trying to let you know.
All right. Thanks, guys.
And of course, that was Roger Eagleton who joined us here on In the Hot Seat. And my, of course, I want to thank Roger for taking time to join us this episode for episode number 93. And of course, to Ashley Van Dyke, ABD Motorsports, for making that interview possible. Very thankful for Ashley for being so awesome to me this year. And it's great to work with her. And I'm looking forward to continuing to work with her in the future as well. Well, before we close out this show, I know Nathan is still thinking about the time that he'll have at Martinsville and just what an exciting race that you're going to be ending your season with in person. It's the oldest track that we have on the circuit. So, man, I'm just curious to know how you're feeling about going to Martinsville.
I'm pumped. This has always been a bucket list track for me. So excited to finally knock one off that list. And I haven't gone to a new track this year either. The five racetracks I've been to this year were tracks that I went to last year. So I'm just looking forward to exploring a new place. You know, I know it's going to kind of have like that stadium environment just because of like how small it is and how tight and compact the pit road area is and everybody from the bleachers, like you can see everything. So that'll be really cool. It'll be my first time kind of down in like true, like legit, like NASCAR country. So I'm just looking forward to checking all out, seeing the scenery at the track, away from the track. It's going to be a really fun weekend. So obviously I know both series will put on a show. This is one of my favorite races to watch for both Xfinity and Cup on TV every year. So to have the chance to finally go down there and check it out in person and see these races happen in real life and report from them is going to be, it's going to be a lot of fun. So looking forward to getting down there on Friday. I've got a journey ahead of me. I've got like 9 hours. A 9-hour drive each way, 10 including the hotel in North Carolina. So we'll be putting on the miles on the old Kia this weekend, but hopefully she'll hold up and it'll be a good safe weekend.
Absolutely. We hope you have some safe driving. And folks, if you want to consider helping us out, get with us. We would appreciate you guys supporting us and backing us up with these trips so that we can do the jobs that we want to do to cover these races. We're serious. We want to go to as many races as possible, but we need your help to go and make those dreams come true. So just reach out to us, send us a tweet or Facebook message us, whatever it is. And Nathan and I will certainly entertain those offers. But looking forward to seeing your reports and hearing all about Martinsville all weekend long. And of course, I know you've got an early Monday drive to go back for media day for St. Bonaventure, but appreciate what you're going to do in advance for us. And can't wait, man. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I got to go get right back on Monday. We got a St. Bonaventure men's and women's basketball media to do. So that'll be fun. It's never ending, but I'm looking forward to it. Hey, we're less than 2 weeks from college basketball season too. And it is always perfect because the opening night of college basketball season is the Monday, the day right after the NASCAR Cup Series Championship. So my two worlds like line up perfectly. So it's awesome.
It just seems like it all goes together. And the nice thing, folks, is once we get to the middle of college basketball season, guess what happens? NASCAR is back. So if you want to go, you know, get through the winter months, not feel so sad about racing, just follow St. Bonaventure Sports. Just saying. It's the best.
Hey, we're going to be pretty good this year. The men's team is picked third in the A-10. So if anybody else, any one of you NASCAR fans want to be an honorary St. Bonaventure fan, please join the club. I know a lot of you in North Carolina might be a Davidson fan, but it's all right. Leave the Wildcats. They're going to have a rough year. Join the Bonnies.
Yes, we're the best, not just in the New York area, but all the country. So just saying, we're not sponsored by St. Bonaventure. Although if they want to sponsor us, talk to us. But anyways, yeah, man, can't wait for that. And it's going to be great. I can't wait for college basketball season to kick off for our team. And I know you folks can't wait to see Martinsville Racing. And then next week, can't wait to hear TPF Live episode number 94. So you know what that means, folks. Unfortunately, it is time for us to go and put a bow on our show. So for Roger Eagleton and Nathan Solomon, I'm your host, Rob Tionson. Thank you very much for joining us here for TPF Live, the world's fastest hour of racing talk. Stay tuned for next week's episode, episode number 94, which is the post-Martinsville Three Phoenix edition of our show. And yes, you folks who want to see the Truck Series finale, you've got to be staying up late in the East Coast because you'll be going past your bedtime to go see who wins the Truck Series Championship. But City Bean Cup, I mean, it'll be pretty exciting, and I'm sure Luis Torres and Christopher Vargas are going to have all the great stuff, just as Nathan and Phil are going to have at Martinsville. But as I always like to say on our show, let's all go get the checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.